You hear that? That's the sound of Pepsi Zero Sugar, the better tasting, more refreshing Zero Sugar Cola. Listen to that endless pour. Pure refreshment. If it sounds this good, just imagine how it tastes. Oh yeah, so good. Pepsi Zero Sugar. Let your taste decide.
This is the Ridge Hunter Outdoors Podcast. This is episode 24. I'm Canyon Clark here with Nate Burgess and Scott Clark. We're at the Iowa Deer Classic, recording a show in here. So I know we're a day late on when we normally come out, but hopefully, if you guys were listening last week, you heard we was going to be up here. I was for sure we weren't going to be able to get one last night since we were on the road. We drove, 6.5 hours yesterday and finished it up today, so it wasn't too bad. But we had a good day yesterday. This is Saturday when we're recording it, and man, has this been a busy place.
Yeah, there's a lot of people here. Lots and lots of people.
Yep, which is good. I know we got some, hopefully some new listeners, so if you guys are listening to this, we appreciate it. But today we're going to talk about prescribed burns, because that's seems to be getting more and more popular all the time, and it's really popular right now. A lot of people think about doing it in the springtime. You can do it in the fall as well, and we'll talk about that a little bit. So I guess we'll just jump right into it. The first thing, like I just talking about, I want to talk about, and Nate, we'll talk about kind of what you're thinking about doing on your piece as well, but the time of year to do it right now is really good, and then also in the fall, so like in the growing season. Right now would be considered the dormant season, and then really the frequency and time of the year are going to be the biggest factors in the effects you actually have, whether that's on wildlife, what you're actually trying to accomplish with it will be affected by what time of year you do it and how frequently. So, but like I said, the first thing, if you're burning now, you're looking at reducing that litter. So everything that's fell from the fall that's still on the ground, you're going to stimulate all that herbaceous growth, which either way, whether you burn in the spring or the fall, you're going to see that. And then this time of year, if you're burning, you're going to stimulate the woody growth. So like all that hardwood regeneration, and all the smaller trees, saplings and stuff like that. You'll see a lot more of those if you burn this year as opposed to in the fall. Now when you get into like September is a good time frame for that. During the growing season, you're going to have a higher intensity fire, which we'll talk about too, kind of the effects of that versus a lower intensity fire. If you're burning now, it's likely going to be cooler, not as much fuel. Now when you're burning in the spring though, you're going to reduce those woody species a lot of because that fire is hotter, so you're going to kill them, and there's more of them out there. And then it's also, like I said, going to stimulate that herbaceous growth. So that's kind of the two different times a year you can do it, and a lot of people look at doing it now. I think it's probably easier to control right now. Generally, it's more wet now than it will be in September in general. And there's just not as much fuel for it, so it's easier to keep it low intensity. I don't know what you're planning on doing, when you're planning on doing it on your piece.
I'd like to do it here pretty quick. So I have a whole bunch of CRP that is getting a lot of viney growth in it. Stuff that's real close to the ground, 4 to 6 inches high, these viney things. I'm not even sure what kind of plants it really is. Definitely not beneficial to me. I'd like to get more native grass and stuff like that going back in the CRP. Right. Hopefully this fire will kill out all that stuff that is less desirable and have all of the seeds that are dormant there in the ground, give them a chance to come back up and get going again. Hopefully give me some taller grasses, stuff that the deer's going to like to lay in better out there.
Right, and more of that browse like what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I think a lot of guys burn just to burn.
Yep.
If you've already got a lot of that native stuff, you can look at burning like every 2-3 years and still maintain what you've got.
Yeah.
Whereas you know, maybe you're in a place where you don't want it to be overly thick in a certain area. If you go and burn that just for the sake of burning it, man, it's going to grow up and be a mess.
Yeah.
Which is part of the benefit of doing it, if that's what you're looking for, like what you're talking about.
Yeah. I've also got some bedding areas in my woods that are kind of open, more open than I want them to be. So I definitely want to go in there, try to get a fire through there and see if I can get that thicker still, get rid of all the leaf litter and everything.
Yep.
I know I'm going to have to be careful around my oaks that I want to protect, that I don't want to kill. There's several mature white oaks in there, a few red oaks, but I sure don't want to kill them. I know I got to be careful in there. But most of those are not in my bedding area. Most of those are out on the edges of the woods more, where I'm able to get to easier to hunt.
And part of, you know, protecting your oaks or whatever you're trying to protect, if you're in the woods, you know, you can rake those leaves away, you can blow those leaves away.
Yeah.
A lot of it has to do with the intensity of the fire, which turns into humidity in the air. So if you're burning on a real, now there's a difference between a dry day and a wet day and a humid day and a not humid day.
Right.
So you can have dry undergrowth that you're wanting to burn on a humid day, and you're going to have a less intense fire, which is going to be better on your bigger timber that you're wanting to save, or whatever you're wanting to save. It's going to be easier to control. If you take a low humidity day, you're going to have more intense fire, notwithstanding the moisture in whatever you're trying to burn.
Right. Yeah.
Yep. And I want to talk about the conditions too. And before we get too deep into this, if someone comes by the booth, I'm going to have to go take care of them, so I might have to duck out. And also, if the audio is not as good as it normally is, that's because we're in this big place. But anyway, the intensity is really going to be what you're looking at, like you're talking about, as far as killing those bigger trees or not. The effect on the wildlife. Most of the time, like, mortality is pretty rare with your fires. If it's the wrong time of year or the wrong day or something, maybe you kill some snakes and stuff like that. But as far as the big animals, they're going to run and get out of there. The smaller animals are going to hide from it.
Mortality on big trees on a woods fire would be very, very low.
Yes. Yes.
Now, if you have an unhealthy tree that has some hollow spots in it, hollow roots or dry under around there, yeah, you can get up there and you can burn there and you're going to kill that tree eventually. Not necessarily a healthy tree anyway.
Might turn him into a chimney that it'll burn a couple of days.
Exactly. Yeah. And but that's not a healthy tree to start with. Now, it may be one you want to save. Maybe it's producing a crap ton of acorns. It's just hollow in a spot or two.
Yeah.
So those are the ones you got to kind of know what you're doing, where you're doing it at.
Oh, yeah.
But like I was talking about with the animals and stuff, you're not really going to have to worry about killing too many of those.
Yeah.
There is a strategy a lot of guys do where they're like a circle burn. Well, they'll start in the middle and then they'll go around the outside and make a circle, the ring of fire, whatever they call it. And they'll burn from the outside in and the inside out at the same time. That obviously doesn't give them a way to go. So if you can make a fire line, you know, on one side or an L shape and give them a way out, that'll help with that. But as far as like the mortality on the trees and stuff, again, intensity has a lot to do with it. So if you can manage what you're doing there as far as the days you're burning, the amount of debris that's in the woods, if you've got logs and stuff piled up, tree branches piled up at the bottom, kick those things out of there. Go walk your whatever you're going to burn, because you can burn the woods like we're talking about. You can burn fields. A lot of guys only look at it for burning fields.
Yeah.
You can burn woods too, absolutely. But you want to see what you're going to be burning anyway, so go walk it. Take the time to go through it and get rid of all that other crap that's going to make it really hot on the bottom of those trees you want to save. And that's going to be really beneficial. And then obviously the wind has a lot to do with that and conditions and stuff. But intensity is going to be the biggest factor, in my opinion, as far as what effects you're going to have.
There's no question.
And that can be dictated by the things we just talked about. It can also be dictated on how frequent you burn. So if you're burning pretty frequent, we'll call it 1 to 3 years, you're going to have a lot less intense fire because there's not going to be as much fuel grown back up there.
Yeah.
And you're also going to see, like, if you're burning on that 1 to 3 years, you're going to maintain kind of that early successional growth period,
yep,
which is what you're looking for in a lot of situations. That's what you want. It'll reduce those woody species, and it'll reduce the soft mass, too, because it'll kill those every year. It doesn't really give them a chance to grow up and be tall. Now, if you're burning infrequently, which we'll call 3 to 5 years, 5 to 10 years, you're gonna
or never.
Right.
<You're> gonna, or for the first time.
And you decide to go in there and burn.
Sure.
You're going to have a lot more fuel. It's going to be, if you think of a thicket, I mean, that's what you're talking about. If you're burning every 5 years, you're going to have a thicket every 5 years. It's going to have a lot of vertical structure, some soft mass in there, and then it'll be dominated by those woody species, the trees and stuff like that, shrubs. So there's going to be a lot of fuel there, going to be higher intensity, and you're more likely to kill all that stuff. So that's kind of some of the ways you can dictate how intense it's actually going to be. And I think probably a combination of the two is the best way to establish diversity where you're at. Whether that be you burn twice in 6 years and then you don't burn again for 7 years, or you take one part of your property and you burn it every 7 years, and you take the other part of your property and you burn it every two, every three. I think that's probably... The diversity is name of the game in about everything that we do as far as, you know, deer managers. So I think that's a good way to establish that. I don't know what – are you thinking about probably wanting to do the fields and the woods this year if you're going to do it? What would you like to do anyway?
I think I'd like to burn it all and see exactly what I get. Mm-hmm. I know one guy that had fantastic results with burning 30 acres of CRP mm-hmm. about 5 years ago. That's when I first started getting interested in it. I saw what he had. I saw him burn it, and then I saw what came back. And it didn't look hardly anything like what he got back. Didn't look hardly anything like what he started with.
Right. Now, when you say come back, do you mean like immediate comeback, or like you looked at it now and then you looked at it 6 or 8 months down the road?
Yeah, the next fall.
Because I've been on a lot of field fires as a firefighter, and you burn off a lot of CRP, and it greens up almost instantly.
Yes.
But I don't ever think, okay, I'm going to go back 6 months from now or 8 months from now and see what kind of foliage or what kind of growth I have. I just know it greens up pretty darn quick, really.
Yes. So he just had... a lot of fescue with some briars and stuff in there. No native grasses that I noticed at all in there. He burned it about this time of year. The next fall, he had a lot of Indian grass.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Lots of tall stuff. No switchgrass, but stuff that was similar to switchgrass in height. Mm-hmm. And the deer just stayed in there like crazy. It was unbelievable the change that made. And all he had to do was light it on fire.
right.
And I suppose fire is somewhat, it's attractive a little bit. You see all these guys that are putting all these.
It looks cool.
Yeah, all these guys putting all these pictures on Instagram and these videos on Facebook, how they burn their place and then half of the neighbors too, you know.
Right.
It's a little exciting.
Well.
And there's a lot of times, if you're not looking to set back your successional stage or your serial stage, like say you got switchgrass field and you just want to keep it in switchgrass, if you mow that thing every couple of years, every 3 years, you can accomplish the same goal as burning it in that situation. And it's going to reseed just like it would with the fire. Now, if you're looking to, like I said, set back, get back to that early successional stage or keep it there, maintain that native growth and what's already there, then burning it, you're not going to be able to do that mowing it. All mowing's going to do in that case is make it shorter. It's still going to be in the same stage it is. Like if you had a mower big enough to mow a 80-year-old woods, you're still going to have an 80-year-old woods, but they're going to be, you know, 6-inch tall tree stumps and stuff. But it's still the same composition in effect. Obviously, it's going to have sunlight and all that, going to go back. But for an example, if you go in and mow a field just full of a bunch of grasses, you're just going to get a bunch of grasses back.
Yeah, I think the difference between mowing and burning is when you mow, all that lays there, and it doesn't all turn to compost. You build up a layer of stuff, mm-hmm. and the burning not only opens up the seeds in that stuff that you mowed, but it also gets rid of that and opens up the ground to more growth and moisture and all that.
And I even think if a guy would go in there and burn it and then run a disc over it afterwards, I don't know if you would achieve much different result, but it might become faster, you know, because you're going to work up what's down below too, and then also give that a pretty good seed bed for what's already there.
I'd love to be able to get rid of all this viney stuff that's out there in the CRP.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that burning it will do it. Like I said, I honestly don't even know what it is, but I know when you, I got me a couple of mowed pads that I use for access to get through back there, you know. Early in the morning, I trip on this stuff.
Yeah.
Pretty regular, you know.
yeah.
You're walking out through there and you'll catch your foot on this vine, and it's just everywhere. You'll find where it's coming out of the ground, and those vines will stretch 10, 15 feet easy,
yep.
you know.
Yep.
Just real low to the ground, whatever it is, I don't know. But it's not beneficial to me at all. The deer want nothing to do with that stuff.
Right. Yeah, they're not going to eat it.
No.
It doesn't do any good for cover.
Nope.
Does a lot of good for Nate hitting the ground.
yeah, tripping me.
And that's a thing, like in the fields, if you're burning a field and you're trying to keep it low intensity, you can go out there and mow that thing first. It's going to help a bunch. We've all seen, like you said, being on the fire department, a CRP field, for example, that's standing 5 foot tall, burns a heck of a lot hotter and faster than one that's just been mowed.
Yeah.
I mean, the stuff that's laying there is going to burn, but down underneath and stuff, it's not going to skip across the top of there and
yeah.
get out of hand as easily. And maybe that's a good lead into about maybe how you should go about burning. And the first thing I would say, whether it's woods or field, is to get you a good fire break wherever you want that thing to stop. And mowing is not a fire break.
No.
Dirt won't burn. If you can get a disc in there, a dozer, something to that effect, that can make you a pretty good fire break. And make sure it's wide enough, because we've all seen fire jump a road, for example, if it's
yep.
burning hot enough. So that's a big thing, having a plan going into
it. I think having a plan, and then I think checking with either your county or your city or your fire protection district and making sure you can burn, because a lot of districts have no burn ordinances, and they have certain times where you can burn. And going out there and talking to those folks, go up there to your local fire chief or your local fire marshal or whatever, whoever it may be, and saying, hey, listen, this is what I want to do. Here's my plan. Can you help me or can you advise me? Those guys will be more than happy. As a fire chief, trust me, I'd be more than happy to help my people around here say, yes, this is the safe way to do it. And either we can help you, or you know what, your plan's good enough. We probably don't need to help you. Everything looks good. Let's go for it. And here's the times that you can do it. Here's what we'd like to see. No problems there. Check with your local authorities first. They'll be more than willing and more than happy to help you out with that.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
And, you know, your local fire department is going to be a big one to contact, because, like us, I mean, most of the time we're going to be more than happy to go out there and sit in the truck and put out some fire when it gets to where you don't want it, you know what I mean? A lot of times, especially in the rural department where you're going to be seeing that, they're not doing much anyway, you know.
And you know those guys, are most of them your neighbors.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Go contact those guys and see if they'll come out and help you and stand by. And even if you're not going to do that, call the dispatch center and tell them you're burning here. That way you don't get 100 phone calls in it, and then they end up there anyway.
And most of the time, your local fire officials are going to know what the weather's going to be. They're going to know the fire danger for any particular time. Let's say Nate wants to burn next weekend. Odds are his local fire official is going to say, you know what, it looks like the humidity is going to be really low and it's going to be windy on Saturday. Maybe we ought to put this off, those kind of things. Even if they don't have any no burn ordinances, it's likely they're going to have specific times they would rather you not.
Yep.
Yep. Just because you've got one day you think you can do it, if it looks like it's going to be a really bad day conditionally, don't burn it just because that's the one day that you think you need to do it. Wildfires are not a good way to make friends.
No. Figure out the parameters for the weather conditions you need to have. And if you don't have them all, just don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't mess with it. It can get way too out of control, too fast.
It's not worth it.
No.
It's not worth it.
Nope. It ain't worth burning down someone's house.
Yeah.
Or their property that they didn't want burned.
Yeah.
Well, bad case scenario, you burn something you don't want to burn. Worst case scenario, you get over on your neighbor's on something that he doesn't want. Even if it's non-valuable, it's not yours.
Yeah.
Right? And so you have to take that into consideration where you're going. And fire does strange things mm-hmm. when the weather conditions are right. So even if you're far away from your neighbor or something you don't want to burn, if you're not a professional, contact the guys that are. Ask for a little help. They'll give it to you. Not a big deal. And you're going to accomplish, the main thing is you're going to accomplish what you want to accomplish safely when you're doing this it's a tool in the toolbox. Mm-hmm. When you're using this tool, which is fire, you do it safely.
Yeah, and speaking of that, definitely make sure you have the tools that you're going to need while you're doing this.
I mean,
rakes, shovels, leaf blowers. If you've got, like, even a 25-gallon boom sprayer or spot sprayer that you use for your herbicide, fill that thing up with water.
Yes.
Make sure you got stuff that you can manage the fire with while you're burning it. Get all that stuff. Get all your ducks in a row is the biggest thing.
As many of your buddies as possible.
Yep, absolutely. Get them buckets of water if you got to, standing places, rakes. Yeah.
You cannot be too prepared when you go to setting that first line of fire.
Yeah, because, you know, even under the perfect conditions, fire can do goofy stuff.
Yeah.
And get away from you.
It will make its own wind. Even if it's not a windy day, it will make its own wind.
Especially if you're talking about high intensity.
Most of us can't afford to hire a company to come out and burn for us, so we have to do it ourselves. And there's nothing wrong with it as long as we do it safely.
Yep. And they're actually, most of the time, your state agencies and stuff, or your state forestry programs, they will have burn plans that you can look up and you can fill out. And like you said, sometimes you got to get a permit. Maybe you don't need anything, but you still, it's a good idea to go and have a permit and all that.
Yeah, there's a lot of counties.
I mean, to have a burn plan.
A lot of jurisdictions may or may not require you to have a plan, but they will require certain no burn days, no burn months, whatever the case might be. So make sure that their laws fit into your plans, depending on what you want to do.
Mm-hmm. Not even just the burn plan, but have a goal for what you're trying to accomplish with the fire. Don't just be burning to burn because it looks cool on Instagram. Figure out what you've got going on your property, and then decide whether you need to or not. And then if you decide you need to, what are you looking to accomplish when you do it? Like what you said, you're looking to get rid of some of that crap that they don't want and replace it with the natural browse, the shrubs and stuff that they do want, the forbs and all that, that they're going to browse in and bed in. Like in your woods, it's not really ideal for them right now to be bedding in or anything in certain areas, so you're wanting to thicken that up.
Yes, I could definitely make that better.
Know what you're trying to do.
And
you know, Jeff on his property, they went and logged that, and then it's been burned a couple of times, and there's parts of it you can't walk through.
Once, not on purpose, well, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Maybe twice, not on purpose.
Yeah, but either way, it's been burned.
Either way, it has caught fire, yeah.
So if you're not looking for that type of result, really think about what you're doing before you go setting fire. And this is talking about, you know, fire to change the habitat, not just you got a food plot left over from last year and I'm going to go in and burn this thing so I can rework it, which is fine too. You know, I mean, it's a good option for doing that, but we're talking about burning as a way of affecting the habitat, I guess, you know, changing it, whether it be the structure or the cover or the browse available, that kind of stuff. And again, it's good to do in the woods or in the open, but have a plan, have some goals set for yourself, contact all the right people. Don't just do it because it's the cool thing to do, but it definitely can be beneficial. And I like where you're thinking, you know, on your property. I think it's probably a pretty good option in places.
To my knowledge, there's never been a fire on that ground in my lifetime. That's almost 30 years now, which is crazy to think about. But anyway, I don't think that I have any drawbacks of having a fire myself at this point. I don't think it can do anything but potentially help me, aside from get out of hand, you know. That'd be the only obvious drawback.
Yeah.
But I'd love to get rid of that viney stuff in the CRP, hopefully thicken up my bedding areas a little more with the regrowth that I get from that fire.
Like your CRP, what kind of, I guess, what size or what kind of blocks are you thinking about? You say you like the wood, wouldn't mind to burn it all?
Yeah, so there's a 40 back in the back, and then there's a 20 that lays north of that, and then there'd be probably 25 acres on the east side of the creek, fairly long and skinny. I've not really decided how to do it yet, exactly what steps I need to
That's kind of what I was getting at with you, how you're going to block that off and to say, I'm going to burn, I can burn half this 40, or I can burn this 20 here, or, you know, I didn't know if you had a, you knew how you were going to do it, or you just didn't want to light it and burn all 100 of it, or, you know.
That'd be the easiest thing to do, but I don't think it's the wise thing to do. I know I got to keep it from going south. That's onto the neighbors. That'll be my biggest hurdle there,
right,
is to make sure it doesn't go south. It can burn all the way into the edge of the woods, to the creek on the west side, and I'm fine with that. That'll be just fine. That creek should help quite a bit. I should only have to worry about it trying to cross that creek in a few spots. When it gets to the north end of the woods, if it burns through the woods, small patch of woods up there, most of that is what I'm wanting to have as bedding area. I might try to cut it off at the edge of what I want to be the bedding area and leave the rest of it. Or I might have it go ahead and burn through the woods to try to get rid of all that litter and see if I can get some of these oak sprouts to come back up. Then on the east side, it's going to burn to another creek, so that's okay there. But then when I get on the east side of the creek to burn that last little bit, that's where it could get tricky, because at the north end is Grandma's old house, and I can't let it get on the neighbors out in their pasture to the east either.
Right.
But I need to come up with a good strategy. I've got a couple places where it's okay. It'll just burn up to the creek. And then the road on the north, on the west half. But anyway, I got to have a good strategy of how to do it.
Another thing, when you get into burning in the woods like this time of the year, is your smaller trees, if they start budding, it doesn't take a lot of heat to knock a bud off. If you kill a bud on a tree this time of year, you're going to kill the tree.
Yeah.
Or at least, I mean, it ain't going to do anything this year.
It ain't going to do anything this year, and more often than not, you're going to kill it, based on my experience with fire against tree buds. So, yeah, it's probably not going to hurt anything in the woods. It depends on whether you're looking for new growth 25, 30, 40 years down the road and what that's going to do to it for a couple of years. You might end up with better sprouts from the fire than what you're killing with the fire. So
yep,
those kinds of things to think about.
Yeah. And that's one thing on the woods I wanted to mention too. If you have reservations about burning, even though it's just pretty bare at the bottom, but your reservations are coming from a place of you've got oaks that you don't want to kill, whether that be young ones or a pretty good stand of old ones, it is impossible to manage a deer herd based on acorn production. It's a good thing to have if you've got it. If you've got some of it and you can keep it, absolutely, by all means, do it. It's a really good hunting tool. It's a pretty poor deer managing tool because you can't predict it. We all know some years, like last year, we had a pretty good acorn crop, but some years are going to be a lot better than others. And it's just not that much forage compared to what they can get from, and we've talked about this maybe on the last podcast or the podcast before, it's not as much forage as what they're going to get from all those natural forbs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and you know that stuff's going to be there every year. You're going to have, you know, anywhere from 1 to 4 tons an acre, or 4,000 pounds an acre. Is that right?
I think you were in thousands. Yeah.
Yeah, 1 to 4,000 pounds an acre. So 2 tons of forage an acre if you burn it versus leaving that. So hopefully you'll have acorns once every 3 years that the deer are going to eat on. And like I said, acorns are great for hunting if you can find them. A great tool for hunting strategy. Not the best for managing a deer herd or managing the habitat in that aspect. So if that's your reservation, maybe take another look at it and decide, maybe burning it would be better to promote some of that other growth.
I've got very few trees in there that are any smaller than my upper arm. Very few in that probably close to 10 acres of woods. So, I mean, it's very mature. I could stand to gain a whole lot by getting fire up in there in where I'm wanting them to bed, to get that natural stuff, the native stuff growing again, to get those sprouts back growing, make it thicker in there. The edges, I probably still want to keep the edges open because I don't want them laying on the edges, because that's the only place I can slip in there to try to hunt, so I don't want them bedding too close to my stand. But if that fire got all the way through my bedding area, I think it'd be very beneficial.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it'd definitely help. And like we were just talking to a guy earlier, he asked what you do for bedding. if you can burn it and get some of that natural stuff growing, you're going to have cover and some browse for them, depending on what comes back. I mean, with what comes back. And like I was telling him, you know, deer are going to feed 2-3 times a day from their bed. So if you can give them some browse close to where they're bedding at on your property, that's that much more time they're going to spend there. And that's that bedding's going to become that much more attractive, because they're not going to want to go very far out of their bed during the middle of the day to browse around and eat. And then if you've got that close to where they're bedding, then they're on you during the daytime. Then they go to your food plot earlier before they go hit the destination field at night. It all just kind of snowballs from there. But like as you're talking about with your bedding area, if it gets in there, it's probably not going to hurt you any. And there's a lot of ways you can do that that aren't fire, but that's what we're talking about. So there's a lot of benefits to it, in my opinion, that in a lot of different ways. Obviously, there are some bad effects, you know, that it's going to have too if you don't do it the right way. And even if you do it the right way, you're still going to kill some stuff that maybe you didn't want to kill. There's give and take with it, but I think depending on the situation, it's a lot more beneficial than it is not.
Oh yeah.
If you're in the right situation where you need it. And we talked about some of the stuff that why you might want to do it or might not want to do it. So, but you got anything else to add on burning or fires or anything you can think about?
Try to come up with everything, every possible possibility.
Contingencies, yeah.
And have a plan for all of that. No fire break is too small.
That's right.
Is too big.
Yeah.
6 foot minimum, absolute minimum.
Yeah,
I would say
so. Yeah. If you think you got it big enough, just go ahead and make it a little bit bigger.
Double it. He'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of what we got on fire for you guys. Hopefully it helps, because like I said, a lot of people are burning right now. If you go on the Facebook groups and stuff and Instagram, that's about all you're seeing.
It seems to be the trending thing right now.
Yeah. And it has been the last couple of years.
And I'm like Nate, you know, my two things would be, number one, have a plan, have a reason you're going to do it. Not just because, like you say, you see it everywhere. Have a plan, have a reason, and be safe about it.
Yep, absolutely. So, like I said, that's kind of what we got on fire. If you guys have any questions about whether you think you need to burn, looking to get some more opinions on it, how to do it, you guys can contact us too. We can be a resource for that. We've got, obviously, a lot of experience with fire in general. Brush fires and field fires, woods fires and all that. And then on the habitat side of it and the deer manager side of it, whether you need to actually do it or not, what do you think about it? You know, we recommended a guy last year who was pretty set on burning some stuff to not do it because he was already had what he needed in a particular spot. Didn't really think it was going to benefit him.
Yeah, the spot he was thinking about burning when you got to talking to him and going beyond the burn, saying, okay, what are you expecting? What do you want to accomplish with this burn? He already had what he wanted to accomplish without burning.
Yep.
And so he didn't have to get the local authorities involved. We didn't have to go in there and help him burn. So it saved him some money, saved him some time.
Creating and maintaining.
Okay, we kind of got cut off there by an announcement through the event hall. So.
So our point was the guy was wanting to burn, but when we got to talking to him and got to asking what he was expecting to accomplish, what he wanted to accomplish, he basically already had what he was looking for. He was just caught up in that burn craze.
Yeah.
And we actually recommended that he not burn. And when we got to talking to him, he said, you know what, yeah, it kind of makes sense. I really hadn't thought about that. You're right. And so... he did not burn, and I think he accomplished what he wanted to accomplish with. Yeah.
Yep.
Setting a fire only for a picture on Facebook or Instagram is definitely not worth it.
That's a very poor reason.
Is that called arson?
It's got to be borderline.
If it's your ground and you're not collecting insurance, I guess you're all right.
I don't know if there's been any precedent set on that yet or not. But, yeah. So, like I said, again, if you guys have any questions about it, want to know anything about it, want to decide whether you need to do it or not, just let us know. We'll help you out. We can tell you a lot by pictures. So it ain't even like somewhere we necessarily have to come out and see everything. So, and talking to you, we get some information and let you know about it. like you just said, don't burn just for the sake of burning. But with all that, we can talk about the show a little bit. I've been pleased with the show so far and the amount of people that are here. We were talking about it on the way up. This is kind of the mecca for whitetail shows, in my opinion. They
at
do
least
things,
of the Midwest.
Yeah,
at least of the Midwest.
Yeah, I think they do things really well. We haven't had any hiccups with anything as far as the show goes. What's been kind of your favorite part of the show? Maybe not just as an exhibitor, but just walking around and seeing stuff. And there's some big names here, too. So.
Mm-hmm. It's neat to see what all's out there. It's neat to see all the guys, the businesses that they have established.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of them at least started just like what we are here, you know.
Right.
They were cutting their teeth, you know. Some of these guys, you can tell they're just starting. Other guys, you can tell they've been doing this for 25 years.
Yep.
But it's neat to see what everybody has to offer to the hunting industry. I suppose you have to call it an industry at this point.
Oh, yeah, it definitely is.
There's so many different areas. Everything, 90% of everything in here is just focused on deer hunting,
yep.
Whitetail hunting.
Yep.
But the variety that you see in here of all the things that comes with whitetail hunting, it is pretty interesting. I mean, we're sitting across from a guy with a pretty successful woodworking business that's building pedestals, different ways to showcase mounts, all that stuff. That's pretty neat. And the guy next to him is selling a finished product here.
Yeah.
Beef sticks. I suppose he's not got deer, but he's got beef sticks.
He's selling beef, but he does deer.
Yeah, that's right. Lots of interesting stuff here, especially if you can get around and talk to some of these guys when they're not busy, see where they're from, what all they've been doing, what works for them, and just how their business has grown over the years.
Yeah. It's kind of cool, like what you were just talking about right here in our own block, because we got the guys across from us who seem to be fairly established, but not a guy name you've heard of.
Yeah.
Maybe if you're in the pedestal buying business, I guess, maybe. But then next to them, you got the Breaking Point.
TV show.
Yep. On YouTube. They got all kinds of stuff. They're on Roku, and I think they've got their own website that their stuff's on. They got DVDs and stuff. They're kind of like, they're not quite a hunting public big, but they're bigger than we are. You know, they're kind of in that stage.
Yep.
And then on the booth next to us, the E&J Outdoors, I would say probably a step above them, but below the booth that's to the other side of us, which is Hoyt Archery.
That's a name that I think you have to know.
Well, I asked the guy earlier if they was just starting out or not, you know, if this was their first year here, because they seem to be doing pretty good with clients and stuff. I mean, their brand awareness is unbelievable for a new company. If you guys haven't heard of them, you should check them out. But no, we got Hoyt right beside us. So it's kind of cool in our own little block. And then, of course, we got us where we're, you know, in our, I guess, technically fourth year of business. What was I saying? Oh, we're in our fourth year of business. So, you know, we're kind of on the early edge of it. We're giving away koozies here, so I lost my train of thought. A couple people stopped by to get a couple. But you've got, even it's just in our own little block, and then once you expand that out to the whole rest of the show, there are just so many different levels, entry, you know, all the way up to, like you said, guys have been around for 25, 30 years.
Yep.
And seeing their setups and what they're doing, I think is really cool. Seeing some of the new stuff that they come up with, some of the dumb stuff that they come up with, some of the stuff that you look at and think, man, that's a really good idea. And then, of course, you know, they've got their Iowa Deer Hall of Fame up here and their Big Buck Contest, their Shed Contest. I don't know how many sheds they had in there. It was a bunch.
Yeah.
But that was all really cool, too. Really interesting. We were talking about that earlier. A lot of the deer in there, you know, you walk through and then you see one that's 150 inches and don't look very big.
Yeah, that's right. You know you're someplace special when you walk through there and you're thinking that about 150s.
Yep, absolutely. And I do like that it's, like you said, 90% geared towards whitetail hunting.
Yeah.
Some of the shows you've been at in the past are kind of just outdoor expos in general, and you don't get quite the same group of people. All outdoorsmen, which is great. But when you can get around this many guys that are just deer hunters, now, it's not saying they're not other things, too. We've talked about a couple different guys about bank polling and catfishing and stuff, absolutely. But everybody's here for the same reason of deer hunting. And it's a really cool culture, in my opinion. And like you said, the industry, meeting all these people, getting to see everybody. It's been pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Dad will get set back down here. We'll figure out what he's like the most about the show. So we were just talking about kind of our favorite parts of the show, and Nate was talking about, you know, the kind of the diversity of groups. Hang on just a second. What's basically been your favorite part of the show?
You know, I haven't seen that many bones in a long time, as far as antlers and stuff. I enjoyed going up there with Nate and looking at those. And I don't know, there's something about being around a whole room full of like-minded people.
Yep, that's what I was just saying too.
That there's a comfort there. It's like everybody here is your friend. You've never met him before, but we all think alike. We all act alike. I would guess there's a lot of people packing in here.
Right.
You know. I don't know for sure. I don't know how legal it is. I don't want to ask. I don't really care. And I'm sure nobody else does either.
Right.
But everybody here enjoys the same things we do, I think.
Yeah, and it's cool to get to talk with those people, and especially in today's world, to know there are this many people who are still sane, you know, and have their wits about them, and you can talk to and just get along with people from all kinds of different backgrounds, and just kind of we all like the same thing, so we can talk about it. We got a common interest. It's pretty cool, and there's been, like I said, a ton of people here. I'd like to hopefully come back, maybe make this an annual thing as far as coming up here, because it's blown away the other shows that I've been to, seen, stuff like that. We're going to try to get to maybe one more this year in Illinois. But this one's been pretty good.
How far is that from Kansas?
Well, it's a few-hour drive. I have to look it up on Google Maps. But, no, it's been a really good show, and I think it'd be kind of hard to beat, you know, in the future as far as what we do in whitetail hunting.
There are a few big deer up here.
Yeah, there are a few beers, too. They start drinking about 10:30. So.
Well, we got here at 8:30, and I went to get a cup of coffee. And the bar was open, but the coffee shop was not, if that tells you anything.
Yeah.
The show opens at 9, and by 10 o'clock, there was more people called with cold beer than there was hot coffee.
Yep. Which
yeah. I'm not saying that's a bad
thing. Yeah. But anyway, no, I think it's been good so far, and we got the rest of the night and a whole other day to go to. I guess this will probably come out on Sunday, so y'all will be listening to this on our last day here. But if you are planning on getting up here today, I'll say, since it will be Sunday, come check us out. We're in booth 305, which is right on the end of 300. Like I said, we're by the Hoyt Archery booth. And come say hi. See
us. A lot of traffic. Good place to be.
Yep.
It's busy, but it's not like
you can't. It's not like you can't get around.
Elbow to elbow crowded, like you're uncomfortable in a crowd.
Right.
And I don't really notice that it being that crowded because, like I said, everybody thinks the same, everybody acts the same, and you don't have to worry about people being stupid necessarily.
Yep.
In a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
I've noticed a majority of people are enjoying refreshments, mm-hmm. but I haven't noticed anybody being stupid.
No.
And so, again, it's like-minded people.
Yep. And then, like I said, I kind of hinted at earlier, there's some big names here, too. You got, you know, like Midwest Whitetail, the booth that apparently vanishes into thin air.
Yeah.
We had to walk around and find it. We had to walk around a few times to find
right,
it.
Right.
But, and then you got Whitetail. Hey. What's going on, man?
Good show.
Like
hey.
Whitetail Adrenaline's over there. They got a really nice, they got a sweet setup over there. Those guys do. Of course, all the big blind manufacturers are here. The big umbrella group that owns Bowtech and all them is here. You know, it's really cool. If you're into deer hunting and you like finding out what new is coming up or what's out there, I think this is a really good show to be at. I don't remember what tickets are exactly, but they weren't crazy expensive, I don't think, either. So if you can get up here even next year, and the Illinois Deer Classic is next week, obviously, it won't be as big, but it'll be similar type show.
My gosh, what would you say, how many deer do we see on the wall, Nate, that were 180 and above? I mean, we walked for literally...
Three quarters of them?
We literally walked for close to an hour, 45 minutes, easy. And we didn't stop. We wasn't a fast walk, but it was just a good meandering, look at this, look at that. I mean,
60, 80?
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, a lot.
I mean, 180s and up.
Yeah.
And there was probably, I don't know, a good 150 in there. 150 deer heads.
Oh, I think so, yeah. Yeah.
And then sheds, gosh, yeah. How many sheds?
How's it going?
Yeah, there were sheds everywhere.
Oh, hey, big time sheds. Big time sheds.
What's going on, man?
And, Canyon's got to step away for a minute. Yeah, we went and walked that room. They actually have a contest, and then where they score deer, and then they have a Hall of Fame of all the deer from the past.
Yeah.
And then they have a shed, I guess you would say maybe Hall of Fame.
Yeah. A lot of
big monster.
Very well known sheds.
Oh yeah, yeah. Nate, you recognize probably three or four of those names.
Yeah.
You say, hey, I remember reading this or something. So
yeah.
So if you've seen it in a magazine, pretty good odds are it may be up here.
Yep, that's right.
And they are way more impressive in person.
Oh, yeah.
You just don't. There's a lot of bone. Lot of bone.
Some of them are so big it's just hard to even imagine.
Yeah.
You know? Gosh, I'd die if I saw some of those horns on a deer walking through the woods.
I might get the shakes. I'm 56 years old. I might get the shake.
Oh, man. Yep. That's for sure.
Yeah, it was. I enjoyed that. Haven't seen that many bones in a long, long time.
Yeah. You pretty much got to come to a place like this to get to see that. You know, there's very few other places that you can go to see anything like that. I mean, even what they got at Bass Pro and Cabela's, there's still more here, you know.
Definitely. And it's a lot of them aren't that old. I mean, there's several of them this year's contest.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe 40 mm-hmm. or so that were in this year's contest. Now, they have a lot of different categories. They have women's categories. They have, obviously, traditional and crossbow.
Yeah.
And men's and women's and all different categories. And several entries in each category. And almost all of them are 160 and above.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe 180.
Yeah.
A lot of them 180s.
Yep. People are killing big deer very frequently up here.
Yes.
That was a case of mistaken identity.
What were they accusing you of?
Not putting him on our website, which I was confused about because I didn't tell anybody I'd put him on our website.
Well, he was right. You haven't put him on the website.
That's true, but I didn't tell him I would either.
There's a nice hat.
Yeah. No, he was from... I don't know, some other booth over there told him they put him on his website with the sheds. He had a pair of sheds that were 179 without a spread.
Yeah.
So like 199. Yeah.
Man.
He didn't have them in the contest or nothing. He just had them scored up here. But
man,
that's some of the stuff like what we're talking about.
Yeah, and he thought he had somebody was going to put him on the website, I guess. Or
yeah, some other booth. He took a picture with them. They said they're going to put him on the website.
And so they hadn't yet, huh?
Yeah, he was accusing me of not. He said I look like the guy. I said, well, I feel bad for that guy. He looks like me. No, but even those guys, you know, good guys, just stood there and talked to them for a little bit just because they thought I was some other guy that didn't put them on the website.
Right. I mean, they didn't act like they were too upset.
No. You know, we got all kinds of people from all kinds of different backgrounds and stuff that up here you can just talk to, you know, about deer hunting.
Well, you all share that commonality, really. Most deer hunters, and I've noticed back when I first started, it's there are a few turd heads in everything you do,
mm-hmm.
but for the most part, they're like-minded and we're all the same and pretty overall bunch of honest people that are good folks, good to be around, good to talk to, good to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
You got a few guys that'll stretch the truth now and then.
Well, surely not.
More fishermen deer than bow hunters.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, occasional gun hunter, so. Right, Nate?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that's one of the things, you know, when you come up here to a show like that, too, you can meet and talk to so many people, so many different people about the stuff they're doing, what's working for them, what's not. Maybe that, you know, you can't swing a dead cat without hitting somebody that's telling a deer story around here. So if you want to hear about what they're doing or some big buck they killed, man, all you got to do is walk up and ask. Anybody around here would be glad to talk deer with you. You can learn a lot. there's a lot of guys up here, like the old guy we talked to earlier, is not necessarily from a business like us, but he does a lot of work with the DNRs around for forestry and stuff. I'm sure that guy, if you had any questions about what kind of wood you got, what you need to have, he'd just be a wealth of information, their whole booth. So not only can you find a lot of cool stuff to spend money on or look for coming out, there's a lot of knowledge around this place too.
I tell you what, seminars, back in the day when I used to go to a few of these, if you wanted to go and spend the day, if you had to drive real far and you were going to spend the night anyway, instead of walking around and, you know, in the same path for 5 or 6 hours, you can take in these half-hour, 45-minute seminars and learn a ton of stuff that you want to learn. And they have seminars on virtually any topic to do with hunting, whether you're managing, whether you've got forest. They up here, they even had a seminar on growing big fish.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, so whatever your most interesting thing is, take in those 30 or 45-minute seminars. It's not that much time out of your overall day.
Right.
Rather than walking around looking bored and trying to figure out what you're going to do for the last 30 or 45 minutes, use that 30 or 45 minutes on a seminar during the middle of the day and then finish up at night. Makes your experience pretty nice. I've been to some of those seminars. Pretty interesting. It's a good break. You get to sit down. You get to kind of chill out for a little bit.
It's a little quieter.
Yeah, it's a little quieter. And they've had some pretty good, you don't have to have a big name, a recognition name, to learn a lot from somebody. There's a lot of people out there that have a ton of knowledge you ain't never heard of.
Right. Yep.
Just because they're not on TV with their $10,000 commercials don't mean they ain't smart.
Right.
I mean, look at Nate.
Yeah, yeah. My goodness. The truth is being stretched right here.
No, I didn't recognize the name on the seminar list. But a lot of the topics they're covering, and their backgrounds, you know, their resume, basically, they definitely know what they're talking about. And there's a lot of interesting ones, you know, that if I was walking around, I'd probably go listen to.
Well, look at that guy that was you were talking to on the forest management in Iowa. Spent 15, 20 minutes with him. It doesn't take 15 or 20 minutes to figure out that guy's pretty sharp.
He knows what he's talking about.
Never heard of him before. He was one of the speakers at the seminar.
Yeah.
If you were into that, definitely a guy you'd want to listen to you ain't never heard of before, and it doesn't take long to figure out he's not just blowing smoke or selling the latest whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. And, you know, obviously there's going to be that at every show you go to, but, you know, I've walked around a little bit and heard some sales pitches that I think, I don't know about that. But there's been other ones, you know, just genuine conversation with people. Most of them around here, like I said, though, are, you know, I'm going to be pretty genuine with you. They're not too pushy trying to really sell you hard on anything like that. It's pretty comfortable to walk around and look at stuff. What you don't want, you just walk on by. What you do want to know about, talk to them. It's just a pretty good show all around, I think. And the people here at the Classic have been awesome as far as helping us out, whether it be in the office or just loading in and out, getting us all the information we need, handing stuff out. It's been definitely a show I look forward to coming back to, for sure. Been a good experience all the way around. So I think that'll kind of do it. I don't know, we may end up recording another one tomorrow for a rainy day kind of thing, but either way, hopefully you guys enjoyed all that, got some good information on burning, and maybe we persuade you to come to the show next year and see us. If we are going to end up being at a show later this year, obviously I'll put that out. Again, I announced it on Facebook. We got another sponsor we picked up for the podcast, so that's exciting. So every one of those we pick up, like I said, I never want it to be like 10 minutes of ads, but that'll help us grow the podcast and make it better. So that'll be coming to you. We'll probably have that on the next episode. We'll probably start that sponsorship. We're still working on the other one we got, but some pretty good companies with some good products. That'll help you guys out. We'll get you some discount codes for them too, so it won't be just you have to listen to us blab. If you want what they got, we'll make it at least somewhat worth your while to go see them. And then that'll be a way you guys can support us. Another way, of course, go to RidgeHunterOutdoors.com. If you're going to buy seed anyway, you can buy it from us. We've got Antler King, Analogix, Whitetail Institute. Of course, we got our own stuff, Grandpa Ray Outdoors, Killer Food Plots. You guys can go on there and find everything we got if you're doing food plots. So Another thing, go to Apple Podcasts, leave us a review. Go follow us on Spotify. If you got any comments, tell us we're really bad. Tell us you really enjoyed it. Either way, you can do that on the reviews or contact us through the website. So either way, we appreciate you guys tuning in, and we'll catch you again next week, which will hopefully be back on Friday schedule. I think we're going to have a guest next week too, so that'll be fun. But appreciate it, guys, and catch you next week.
At Care Heating and Cooling, we put you first. You are the reason we're open 7 days a week and why it's easy to schedule service at careheatingandcooling.com. Your safety is why we check every gas furnace for carbon monoxide. And it's because of you that our techs are paid to fix your furnace, not sell you a new one. So it's no surprise that last year Care was awarded a BBB Torch Award for ethics, because at Care, we're committed to doing business right. Call Care at 1-800-COOLING when you need a company you can trust.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.